Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
Dreaming of blissful summer days and creamy popsicles? Capture sun-drenched memories with the Orange Vanilla Dream Hydration Multiplier from Liquid IV. Just one stick and 16 ounces of water can help hydrate you better than water alone. Live your summer dream with Liquid IV. Tear, pour, live more. Go to liquidiv.com and get 20% off your first order with code INDULGE20 at checkout.
On the morning of August 15th, 2002, Mike and Mary Short were found murdered in their rural Bassett, Virginia home. Their 9-year-old daughter, Jennifer, was nowhere to be found. It quickly became clear that she had been abducted by the killer. An extensive search for Jennifer began, but sadly, weeks later, her remains were found approximately 40 miles away from her home. She, too, had been murdered. It's been more than 21 years since Mike, Mary, and Jennifer Short were killed, and investigators are still searching for the person responsible. Hey everyone, welcome back to Detective Perspective. My name is Derek Lavasser. I'm a licensed private investigator and former police detective. Each week I'll be covering an unsolved case in story format. I'll then give you my perspective on the investigation and provide contact information for the individuals or organizations connected to the case so that if you have any tips, you can contact them directly and maybe you can help solve a case. So if you're someone who's interested in true crime, specifically unsolved cases, and you would like to hear my opinion on those investigations, please consider subscribing whether you're watching on YouTube or listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever platform you use. So this story is going to have a lot of peaks and valleys. At moments, you're going to feel like there's no chance of this case ever being solved. And there are going to be moments during the story where you're like, hey, we're right there. We're about to make an arrest and we're finally going to get the answers to what happened to the Short family. But then something happens and it completely changes the course of the investigation. And obviously, if we're covering it here on Detective Perspective, that means the case is still unsolved. But the question is why? So we're going to go over all the facts of the case like we always do. We're going to talk about some of the suspects who have been identified in this case, I will say. Most of them have been cleared. And then we're going to talk about the possible scenarios as to why this case has not been solved yet. So with that out of the way, let's dive into this week's case. In the late 1980s, Michael Wayne Short and Mary Frances Hall got married. Mike, known for his cheerful nature, had been married before and had 3 grown children. Mary, a kind and supportive woman, didn't become a mom until July 12th of 1993, when Mike and Mary welcomed their own daughter, Jennifer Renee Short. The family settled into a ranch-style home off US 220 in Bassett, Virginia, a small town with around 1,300 people. Their home was located in a rural area with the nearest neighbor living 100 yards away. There was a Circle C convenience store and a hotel nearby, as well as a flea market and a junkyard across the highway, but that was it. For many years, Michael and Mary ran a mobile home business called M&S Mobile Home Movers. However, by 2002, their business wasn't doing well financially. According to Fox 8, the couple began considering a move to South Carolina. Throughout the spring and summer of 2002, Mike made several trips to different towns in South Carolina, including Bentonville, Florence, Conway, and Myrtle Beach to search for a new job. Then on August 5th, the couple listed their Bassett home for sale. Since Mike hadn't found a job in South Carolina yet, the family planned to temporarily move into a mobile home if their house sold. Unfortunately, they never got the chance to relocate. Before 9 a.m. on August 15th, one of Mike and Mary's employees, Chris, arrived at the Short family home to help Mike with work. However, he couldn't find Mike outside, so he went into the garage. There, he found 50-year-old Michael Short lying on the couch where he sometimes watched TV at night. According to Fox 8, he was dead from a single gunshot wound to the head. Chris then went inside and found 36-year-old Mary Short in bed. She too had a single gunshot wound to the head. Chris also searched for 9-year-old Jennifer Short, but couldn't find her anywhere. He immediately called the Henry County Sheriff's Office, who quickly arrived to investigate. When the police searched the house, they noticed that the phone line had been cut, suggesting the attack on the Short family had been planned beforehand. They also found a single spent .22 caliber shell casing next to each body. The police noted that there were no signs of a struggle, leading them to believe that Mike and Mary were killed in their sleep. Furthermore, nothing seemed to be missing. Even $600 in cash and multiple blank checks were left behind. In Jennifer's room, the police noticed that her mattress had been moved a few inches, her sheets were pulled back, and her pillow was on the floor. According to the Greensboro News and Record, at first, the police thought that Jennifer might have run away and hid during or after the shootings, so officers decided to spread out and search around the family property, but unfortunately she wasn't located. This led law enforcement to conclude that Jennifer had been, quote, forcibly and swiftly removed from her bed by the killer, who then fled the area. Unfortunately, because the Shorts lived off US 220, a north-south four-lane highway, Jennifer and the killer could have already been hours away. The only good news was that there was no sign that Jennifer was badly hurt. An Amber Alert was sent out and Jennifer's information and picture was put on billboards across Virginia. Many agencies, including the Virginia State Police and FBI, were called in to search for Jennifer and the killer and investigate the double homicide. Now, before we continue on with this story, let's take a quick break.
Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar plant protein bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
Okay, so the police worked very hard to pinpoint exactly when the murders and abduction happened. To help with the investigation, they interviewed Chris extensively. According to the Washington Post, Chris told the police that on the evening of August 14th, he and Mike were fixing a truck from around 7 p.m. to midnight, and when he left, Jennifer was already in bed. Chris said that he didn't go back to the Short home until the morning of August 15th. That's when he found Mary and Mike dead and Jennifer missing. The police later said that Chris was cooperative in every interview and was not considered a suspect. Based on Chris's statement, it appeared that the attack on the Short family happened sometime between midnight on August 14th and 9 a.m. on August 15th, leaving a 9-hour window. The police wanted to narrow it down even further, but it was difficult because the highway drowned out any sounds of gunshots. Along with trying to pin down the time of the attack, dozens of officers and volunteers searched the farmland, groves, and woods around the family house. They used helicopters, dogs, and four-wheel drive vehicles to help, but the search was hindered by intermittent rain. Authorities spent more than 2 weeks in the Short home processing it for evidence, and by the time they were done, they had collected more than 1,000 pieces of evidence and fingerprinted everything they could think of, including the walls. The police later told Fox 8 that DNA evidence was found inside the home, but they didn't provide any further details. And as I sit here to this day, we still don't know what happened with that DNA evidence, if anything at all. On August 16th, the day after Mike and Mary were found murdered, the police said they didn't have any suspects, motives, or description of the killer's vehicle, and they were still searching for Jennifer. One police captain said, quote, "With every hour that goes by, I'm afraid the situation will get even more drastic." The captain then shared a direct message for the abductor. He said, quote, "If you have this young child, please do the right thing and release Jennifer in a public area and in some way notify local law enforcement so we can find her." On August 17th, the case was featured on America's Most Wanted. 3 days later, the police said they had no new information and that they were still searching for Jennifer and reviewing all evidence they had collected. According to the Associated Press, the police disclosed that at some point, they believe the killer or killers likely knew the Short family and had been inside their house before. The police were looking into Mike's business to see if there were any disgruntled employees or customers who might want to hurt him. They also looked into anyone who might be interested in buying the house. Now, obviously, real quickly, this is a tactic that investigators will use in every case. If you don't have a clear suspect, you have to go back and reverse engineer everything. There's something that occurred at some point during the victim's life that led to where they are today, especially if you don't think that it was just some random act of violence, which in this case with the cut phone wire, the rural area of the property, it does appear to be a directed attack. So when you have a case like that, more than likely the killer or killers know the victim. So the question is, how? How do they know them? And you want to always start with, you know, friends, family, to gather information and then expand that search to employees, colleagues, business associates, customers in this case. And you want to try to identify anyone who would have a potential motive. Again, these are pretty common practices and they're employed by investigators every single day. But the next thing that was done isn't as common, although it should be. A funeral was held for Mike and Mary. The police recorded the church service looking for suspicious behavior, but they didn't see anything out of the ordinary. And this is what I'm talking about right here. It's not always done, but what a great investigative tool to record the wake or the church service to see who shows up. Yes, they didn't see anything out of the ordinary at the time, but let's say down the road, weeks, months, or even years later, they identify a suspect and they say something that can be contradicted by behavior in the footage. That can be critical. They also can go back and look at the footage and may specifically focus on this person. And although they didn't notice anything initially, maybe watching that person directly may reveal something. So again, it doesn't hurt to record it. It can only help investigators down the road who may be in charge of investigating this case. Now on September 4th, authorities decided to exhume Mike's body to gather hair samples, which hadn't been taken during the initial examination. At this time, the police provided another update, noting the investigation lacked solid leads and substantial evidence pointing to a suspect. They did speculate that the perpetrator had been, quote, methodical. Now, while all of this was going on, the search for Jennifer continued with everyone clinging to the hope for her safe return. But tragically, that wasn't the outcome. On September 27th, a man named Eddie called the police to report that he had found a human skull on his property near Stoneville, North Carolina. He lived off Grogan Road, around 40 miles away from the Short family home. According to the Washington Post, Eddie told the police that 2 days earlier, he noticed his dogs playing with what looked like an old wig. Thinking nothing of it, he threw it away, but then on the 27th, his dogs were playing with what appeared to be a turtle shell. But when Eddie picked it up, he realized it was a human skull and promptly called the sheriff's department. For the next few days, the police searched for the rest of the remains on Eddie's property, which included a creek that ran through his yard, spanned by a bridge. In the end, the police were only able to recover around a quarter of the remains, which had been scattered around the stream bed and under the bridge. As far as what they actually found, they were able to recover the skull and full head of hair that Eddie's dogs had been playing with. They also found leg bones, part of a jaw, a rib cage, bone fragments, and 16 teeth. Initially, the police told the media that they didn't believe the remains belonged to Jennifer because the hair didn't match hers. However, by early October, the results confirmed that the remains did indeed belong to Jennifer Short. She had suffered a single gunshot wound to the head, just like her parents. On October 8th, Jennifer's remains were released to her family, and later, the bridge near where she was found was named the Jennifer Renee Short Memorial Bridge. So up to this point in the investigation, it's basically been all bad news. But that's where the story takes a turn, because on October 15th, the police disclosed that they had traveled to Canada in search of a Madison, North Carolina man named Garrison Bowman, who also went by Gary. The police were careful not to publicly name him a suspect. However, in court documents, they did refer to him as a, quote, potential suspect. According to the Washington Post, a landlord had informed the police that 2 days before the killings of Mike and Mary Short, Gary told the landlord that he had paid a man in Virginia to move his mobile home. Gary said that if the man didn't move his home or return his money, quote, he would have to kill him. This information obviously piqued the interest of the police as Mike operated a business that moved mobile homes. Additionally, the landlord claimed to have seen Gary installing a, quote, false door in his van and drilling holes in a side compartment. And on top of that, he even found a map in Gary's home with the Short family home marked with an X. Lastly, the landlord recounted an incident on August 15th, the day of the killings, where Gary approached him with a pistol. The following day, Gary disappeared and his trailer had been moved. Now, the police did have the landlord undergo a polygraph test, which he passed. So the police looked further into Gary, and during their investigation, they learned that he had leased a mobile home around a mile away from where Jennifer's remains were found. Now, if all of that wasn't suspicious enough, the police also learned that one day after the attack on the Short family, Gary left North Carolina and moved to Yellowknife, Northwest Territories, Canada. So based on all of this information, many people thought that Gary was responsible for the murders, but Gary's friends were adamant that he was innocent. One friend told the Greensboro News and Record, quote, "Everything's gotten turned around and makes Gary look bad." This friend explained that he had spent the same day as the Short family murders with Gary because Gary wanted to donate clothes to his church. The friend further clarified that Gary's move to Canada wasn't to escape arrest, but rather a plan he had for years. Another friend also dismissed the idea of Gary being the killer. He recalled spending the entire day of the 14th with Gary, who had been drinking some beer, something he was known for. The friend said Gary was ready to go to sleep by the time he left in the late afternoon, and he was, quote, in no shape to go anywhere. So basically what the friend's saying here is, hey, I can tell you for sure he was too drunk to even make it to his bed, never mind drive to the Short home. But even with his friend sticking up for him with all the other information that they had, Gary was brought back to the United States where he met with the police. And from what we know, he cooperated fully, answering all of law enforcement's questions without even having a lawyer present. Now, even with that being the case, the police were still suspicious of Gary, so they took their evidence to a grand jury, but they decided not to charge him. And later, in a surprise turn of events, he was cleared as a suspect entirely by law enforcement. Again, unexpected, and in a way, on one hand, you are disappointed, but on the other hand, you're happy because if he is in fact innocent, the last thing we want is someone being charged for a crime they didn't commit. Now, we still have more to go in this story, but let's take our last break.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Okay. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQBar plant protein bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQBars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
Now, the search for Mike, Mary, and Jennifer Short's killer continued. In September of 2003, authorities exhumed Jennifer's remains for, quote, forensic purposes, but no further details were provided. Then a task force with members from the FBI, ATF, state police, and other agencies was formed. According to WFMY2, the task force eventually interviewed three men who claimed to have knowledge of the Short family's fate. However, it turned out that these three men had lied in hopes of claiming the reward money. They were charged with conspiracy, perjury, and providing false information to law enforcement. The task force continued its investigation, but there was no significant updates until November of 2006. At that time, Henry County Sheriff H.F. Castle and 12 of his deputies faced charges related to dealing crack, marijuana, and ketamine. According to ABC News, for years, Castle and his deputies would confiscate drugs, issue fake destruction orders, and then sell the drugs. The corruption indictments against Castle and his deputies led to speculation that illicit activities within the sheriff's department might have compromised the investigation into the Short family murders. Some even wondered if the two cases were linked. However, FBI officials later clarified that there was no connection between the cases, and the corrupt activities did not significantly affect the Short investigation. Castle later pleaded guilty and received an 8-month sentence. Now, obviously, this information is extremely disheartening, not only as a former law enforcement officer, but also for the sake of the investigation. I can see how you can go through the evidence and show with a high degree of certainty that the cases aren't linked, but I don't know how you can definitively say that these individuals who had jurisdiction over this murder investigation would not have been affected by their illegal activities, right? If they're doing all this illegal stuff and trying to make sure they don't get caught, how can they be fully focused on the Short family murders? I just don't see how that would be possible. The only explanation would be that although they were part of that sheriff's department, they weren't directly involved with the investigation. But I don't see how that's possible when Castle was the head of the department. He was the top dog. I mean, he led by example. And if he's doing that type of stuff and 12 other deputies were as well, are we to believe that none of them had their hands in this investigation? I think that's highly unlikely. So again, very disheartening. And it does make you wonder if these individuals who were a part of this case were focusing on their extracurricular activities as opposed to the case, what did they miss? Now, despite this major hurdle, the task force continued their investigation. And in 2009, they were able to release a considerable amount of new information to the public. They revealed that during the early morning hours of August 15, 2002, an unidentified male was spotted sitting in a vehicle along US Highway 220 near the Shorts' home. The driver was described as being in his 40s with a, quote, weathered complexion. His vehicle was described as a 1998 to 2002 white single cab, 2-ton flatbed stake body truck with wooden rails. Sketches of both the man and his vehicle were circulated, but as of now, neither have been identified. In June of 2012, a new task force started investigating the Short case. They expressed their belief that there were, quote, a couple key people withholding crucial information. An officer told the Henry County Enterprise that during the initial investigation, multiple people had said, quote, I don't want to get involved. Because of this, the task force began re-interviewing people to see if they were now willing to cooperate. By 2015, the police speculated that the motive behind the murders might have been Jennifer's abduction. They urged Jennifer's friends, including members and coaches of her sports teams, to recall anyone unusual they encountered between June 1, 2002 and August 14, 2002. Additionally, the task force was hoping to meet with people who had discussed the Shorts' potential move to South Carolina. They were specifically interested in speaking with anyone who had interacted with Mike and Mary or Mike's business between January 1, 2001 and August 15, 2002. Now, why they're doing this, I can only speculate that at this point, they're going back and starting from square one. These are new investigators, it's a new task force, and they don't want to build their investigation off false information or outdated information. So the best thing they can do is go back and re-interview everyone, including friends, family, colleagues, employees, etc., but also expand the scope of their interviews by talking to individuals who may have had conversations with Mike or Mary and may get more information as to why Mike and Mary were interested in moving to South Carolina. Was it purely business purposes, or was there something else at play where Mike and Mary felt like they had to leave the state of Virginia? Now, in 2016, the police had asked the public for more help with the case, and according to WFXR-TV, by then, the police had spoken to over 4,000 people and had some suspects in mind, but they were still checking out new leads. Then in 2019, the Short family home, which was vacant, burned down. Authorities weren't able to determine the cause of the fire. However, they do not believe the fire and the murders were connected. In 2001, another new task force was formed to investigate the Short family murders. They told WRIC that they have suspects they're focusing on, though they can't disclose names. The task force said they were driven to crack the case, and one investigator even keeps a photo of Jennifer on his desk as a reminder of their goal. Now, even though this task force was motivated to solve this case, August 2022 came and marked 20 years since the Short family had been murdered. The police spoke to ABC 8 News and said that while there was no new developments, experts were going to re-examine evidence after receiving a grant. Unfortunately, that's the last update we have in this case. The police are still looking for the person or people responsible for the deaths of Mike, Mary, and Jennifer Short, and their families are desperate for answers. Okay, so let's dive into the perspective, and this one shouldn't be that long because this case is pretty self-explanatory, although I do have some questions. First off, let's start with what we know. You have a cut phone line, single gunshot wounds to the head, no signs left behind to send a message. It doesn't appear to be a robbery. The money was left behind as well. So to me, this looks like a pre-planned, targeted attack. Someone had a real issue with Mike and Mary Short, and because they were both killed the way they were, it suggests to me that this may have had something to do with one of their business dealings. The killer could have just walked into the garage, shot Mike, and then been on their way, but no, they chose to shoot Mike, then shoot Mary, then take Jennifer and eventually kill her as well. I think the biggest question that I have leaving this case is why take Jennifer if you intended on killing her the exact same way as her parents? You could have a couple situations going on here. The killer or killers could have been on the fence about what they were going to do. Were they going to take her and eventually try to get some type of ransom or use her as a hostage if they were caught by law enforcement? Or if it was a situation where initially they were maybe contemplating keeping her alive, maybe they didn't want to be responsible for killing a child, and then realized later that having her would tie the murders back to them? Or was it a situation where this was used as a diversion? They figured that by taking Jennifer, law enforcement would devote most of their resources to finding her as opposed to working the homicide investigations. Either way, it's a head scratcher for me. I don't know why they took him, and it's difficult sometimes to get into the mind of these monsters. So with that being the case, this sounds like whoever did this, they had an axe to grind with Mike and Mary, and they felt like they had been wronged by Mike and Mary. Was that during a business dealing? If I had to guess, I would probably say so. But this individual went there with the intent on killing everyone. That was their intention. That was their motive. If that weren't the case, they would have taken the money or they would have demanded some type of ransom after taking Jennifer. They did none of that. They went in there, single gunshot wounds to the head, very clean, in, out, and they're on their way. So to me, it feels like someone who said, hey, you did me wrong. This is how I'm retaliating. And that's the end of the story. No other ulterior motive in mind, just an eye for an eye in their mind. Which is why I think we're hearing about Task Force now going back and looking into the business dealings that Mike and Mary were having around the time of their deaths. Because to me, that's where you might solve this case. I know we talked about the fact that Mike and Mary were looking to move to South Carolina because of financial reasons, and that very well could have been the case. But I wonder what was going on underneath those layers. Some of those financial issues that they were having, what were some of the residual effects? And what I mean by that is, who were they pissing off? Who were they not paying? What services were they not providing that they had promised? All of these things come into play. And those are the individuals we have to look into. And that's why the whole situation with Gary is so disappointing. And let me qualify quick by saying, when you're following the breadcrumbs involving a particular suspect, even if they match steps 1, 2, 3, and 4, if on step number 5, it definitively rules them out and shows some level of exculpatory evidence, even though they look good at every other step of the way, it doesn't matter. They're innocent. And that I'm assuming that's what happened here. I also wonder, based on maybe some of the specifics we don't know, if law enforcement still thinks Gary's good for this, but a grand jury just decided there wasn't enough for an indictment. although it does seem like they've changed the course of this investigation and haven't really alluded to the fact that they already know who it is. They just can't charge that person, which we sometimes see. It does make me believe that there is some piece of information that we're not aware of that completely rules out Gary, and that's why he's no longer good for this. But I will say this, the profile surrounding Gary, I still think that's good. I think we're looking for someone who's a disgruntled customer who feels like they were shafted out of some money or a service, and we may not have a lot of connections between them and the Shorts, but that minimal connection that we do have is the motive behind the murders. So how do we identify that person? Well, it's going to involve people from the community, friends, family members, colleagues, business associates, former customers. Someone has to come forward, whether it was people that came forward earlier and just didn't divulge all the information, or people, like I said in this case, who didn't feel comfortable divulging what they knew at that time. It's not too late. More than likely, the suspect or suspects are still alive. They can still be held accountable for what they did. So if you're one of those people out there that may be able to assist in this case, here's a quick recap. Between midnight on August 14th, 2002, and 9 a.m. on August 15th, Mike and Mary Short were murdered in their home located off US 220 in Bassett, Virginia. Their daughter, Jennifer, was abducted and later found murdered around 40 miles away near Stoneville, North Carolina. All three of them had a single gunshot wound to the head. If you have any information about this investigation, you're asked to call the Henry County Sheriff's Office at 276-638-8751. There is a $62,500 reward available. As for my final words on this case, again, a family taken too soon, 9-year-old girl just starting to live her life, no longer with us, killed for no reason whatsoever, and the killer and or killers are still out there and more than likely still alive. Yes, this is a cold case, 21 years plus, but it's never too late. And it does sound like there's people out there who had information at the time that could have solved this case, but they just didn't feel comfortable coming forward. In some situations, those same witnesses, as they get older, realize what's important in life and are less concerned with what could happen to them and may be incentivized to speak out to the police finally. And I'm really hoping that's the case. This new task force seems motivated. They seem determined to solve it. And it seems like they got the right mindset where they're going to start from ground zero and see where the evidence takes them. If there's any major updates in this case, obviously, I will keep you guys in the loop. Until then, stay safe out there, and I'll see you next week.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.